When along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to conch a hawking horse with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab.
And they go through like on a school level.
Gotcha.
And on a local level and then regional and national level. So it's pretty exciting for them.
Okay, that's awesome. So, the music's probably winding up. Welcome to Barnstorming, PA. This is one of our, because it's campaign season, we're happy to be talking to people who are running. Today on today's show, we have Tierra Williams. I said that right, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. We have Tierra Williams, who's running for township supervisor in Ferguson Township in Center County. Robert, what is that? You're the campaign manager?
I'm the campaign chair. I deal with the odds and ends and the nooks and crannies, I guess is a way of putting it.
Awesome. Tierra, you want to say hi and give us, a little bit of, what a campaign speech is going to, maybe that's not the right word, but what's the kind of thing you would say to a voter?
What's the kind of thing I would say to a voter?
Yeah, just so people can get to hear your voice. And
well, hello everyone again. I'm Tierra Danielle Williams. I reside here in Ferguson Township. I am a mother, an activist, a public speaker, a poet, and a bunch of other things that I probably don't have time to go down the list of. My son is 6 years old. He attends Young Scholars. So shout out to all the teachers. I did not realize how hard your jobs were until, well, I knew because I taught preschool, mm-hmm. but I didn't know how hard it was just teaching my son by myself all day.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, is this how you act in class? So, shout out to all the teachers out there.
Yeah.
What I would tell any voter is to use that right and vote. Honestly, systematically and historically, but currently speaking, there have been so many ways where people's votes have not been counted. They've been stifled. People are fighting for rights for people to regain their votes after coming back into society. So first thing I would tell a voter is to vote, even if that's not for me. Mm-hmm. Exercising that right. There are a lot of people who went through a lot of literal blood, sweat, and tears to be able to give us that platform to do that. And I do think that, honestly, more change happens within local elections. So I think voting is just a very important thing in general. And that's what I would tell the voters, to go and vote.
Sure. So I'd be really curious, for people who may not know it as well, like how would you describe, Center County, Ferguson Township, or, any of the other kind of details about the local place?
Describe it in which way? You mean the people, the atmosphere?
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. If somebody's never been there, so they can understand your race and like you kind of, what's the scene like?
I mean, Happy Valley, quote unquote.
Yeah.
What it's called.
Right.
We can start with the obvious that this is a beautiful city to live in. It is a great place for to raise your kids and for them to go to school. And I say that coming directly from Mississippi, which mm-hmm. has the lowest or one of the lowest educational systems in the country, as well as one of the highest crime rates in the country. So I'm coming here for me personally. I can't speak for every resident, but it's kind of interesting to walk down the street and see so many people who don't have blinds and shades because they're not necessarily concerned of break-ins and things like that, right? So that's mm-hmm. that's a good thing, right? It's mm-hmm. a very clean area. Beautiful, beautiful trees and mountains is something that I didn't get to see in Mississippi. Now, the snow, I have a problem with. I like the South and I like the heat, so I'm glad that it's getting back hot. With all of those things and, like I said, it's a great place to raise your kids and have a good school system, right? But not every child is having that same experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great and beautiful place to live, but not everybody can afford to mm-hmm. live out here, right? You see the beautiful trees and the beautiful greenery, and not everyone is able to just take a drive and just soak that in such a way, because they're dealing with so many other stresses of reality around here.
Right.
It's a nice, beautiful place, but I don't think we pay that much attention to mental health and the real effects of it, and how many people actually develop or come into their mental health issues once they enter college. And this being a big college town and not having mental aid for all types of people, you know. So there's a lot of good things, but then there's a lot of things that because of the appearance, I think it kind of shields and covers up what is going on with some of the everyday people and the types of obstacles that they have to encounter and endure. And it's not necessarily Happy Valley for everyone.
Right. And
that would be the main thing to understand, that from your seat, from your house, from your position at Penn State, from your job at the bank as the bank manager, it does seem great. And your kids are thriving and it seems awesome, but that's not how everyone's experience is here. And that doesn't mean they want to move. It's just they want those same experiences that
fellow
citizens have. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. So I live in Union County, which is one county over, but it's something that I feel like people don't always understand when they look at rural PA. And I've been here for about 20 years, but the Susquehanna Valley, like you're kind of on the other side of that. And I find that the river sheds that does affect, there's other reasons, media markets, but like, even though from, my house to downtown State College is about 60 minutes, a lot of people in this area go east more, right? So they go to like Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, or other places. I think that's something that, that's important, because my experience, and Robert, I don't know if you want to say anything about this, because you live in Center County also, is like Center County is like both very much like a rural county, but it's very much its own kind of place. And I think a lot of that is because of Penn State, like you said, which is, massive. I don't know, 30, 50,000 students or something like that.
Yeah. To touch on it and not to steal time from Tierra, it is like, I've been.
Yeah. Here, you only get 90 seconds, by the way. Tierra and I worked that out. So you better.
Okay. That's well. Cool. So about over 15 years living here, there's about 50,000 undergrad students, quarter of which are actually Asian. Not to be a heavy Asian population. And, you kind of get that city mindset from the university, because a lot of people come from Philly, New Jersey, New York, DC, Pittsburgh. You get a lot of influx from that. And with that, so State College is kind of like a mixture of, the rural areas. And then outside of the center region, you have a lot of very PA rural areas. And Ferguson Township, where Tierra is kind of like a mixture of it. It's like, right by the borough, you have the very city-like mentality. But you're further out, you have farmland. Mm-hmm. So it's, it's an interesting hybrid.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Like, Tierra, we were talking before I hit record. Did you say you like grew up in Jackson? Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in what most people call North Jackson, Ridgeland, Mississippi. I went to what most people would consider a better school and lived in a better area. And even so, we still kind of dealt with the same things, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. I was just wondering, let me ask this question real quick. So like, because that whole like college town thing, I live in one too, Lewisburg, and it is a kind of unique thing, or it's a distinctive thing. It's not as uncommon, I think, as people realize. But, you do get a lot of visitors, parents, students, right? And, I'm on my borough council. Like, there is a bit of a collective mentality of, like, we're going to put our best foot forward, right? Like, when the reality, and maybe we can talk more about this, is that the lived experience for people who live in the borough, or for people who aren't from Pennsylvania, township is, like, a way we divide up counties into political units. Where was I going with this? Their like lived experiences and the reality kind of gets either under noticed or sort of under addressed. Like, for example, my borough of Lewisburg, people move here. Some people retire here because it's nice and it has a little downtown. And that's true. We also are like 45% rental units. And we have neighborhoods that are, because of the rate of poverty, lead us to qualify for some grants. And people are like, oh, that's just the students. And it's not the students, actually, right? It's a lot of folks who are, working lower wage jobs, which are that way because of the political economy we have and all of that. So Is that similar to Ferguson in some ways in your experience? That sort of two sides?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, well, when you look, some of the campus is Ferguson.
Okay. Right?
And the question, you know, the real question is, do we want people to just pass through here, or do we want people to stay here and make a living and a life here?
Yeah.
There's a lot of places where it's a lot of students that are living in these areas, but they're not necessarily family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Every family here can't afford a house.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at these apartments and some of the rates and then what some of these families have to live by, and, you know, I've been a college student, I understand, but I also understand that, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, that's when some of them wake up. I don't, you know, so it's not very conducive when you think about it like that. And, mm-hmm. and you, the question to me, honestly, is, do we want people to actually stay here? Or do we want people to just pass through here?
Right.
If we want people to stay here, then we're going to have to talk about affordable housing. And if we want students to be able to start working on their independence and not living on campus, there's going to have to be affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was at Jackson State, there were apartments close to campus that students stayed in, but as well as certain families, but it was affordable for a student who maybe had a part-time night job and was going to class every day. This is not affordable for some of those students. And not every student that was accepted here has family with a lot of money that can send them a lot of money. Not every student that's been accepted here has a car to get around, you know, so there's a lot of, mm-hmm. there's a lot of financial factors with that.
Sorry, I don't know, my life of the home podcaster, my dog, he's usually pretty quiet. No, that's a great point. So one last thing just about the landscape. So like, if I'm in State College and I'm driving, like, is it the kind of thing where like I leave the borough and I'm in Ferguson and I would never know the difference, like the development, and because you said the campus is even extends, is it into Ferguson? It's like that. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, honestly, I think that we as Center County need to make clearer markers. Honestly, I actually thought that I stayed in the borough.
Yeah, of course.
And actually attempted to fill a empty slot on the State College Borough Council.
I mean, that happens for people. I mean, you moved here a few years ago. That's true for people who have lived here their whole life. They're like, I live in Lewisburg. I'm like, actually, you live in East Buffalo Township. Like, they don't even know it. But anyway, go ahead.
And literally, I'm actually literally two houses.
Oh, really?
On the same street as the borough and Ferguson.
Right.
That's why I was so confused. I was like, what? You know?
Yeah, totally.
So I think that we need to honestly educate the community about the municipalities and the governing stance of it, right? So it wasn't until I actually started getting into the elections, and mm-hmm. that's when I realized, oh, the mayor of State College mm-hmm. is only the mayor of the borough.
Right.
Not the mayor of all these townships. But yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily clear to every citizen.
It's really not.
It wasn't clear to me. Mm-hmm. I just recently moved here. And if I hadn't honestly tried to get into politics in any way, whether it was just serving on school board or borough council or whatever, I wouldn't have even known that. And I think that's something that people in this community shouldn't be ashamed of, but that we need to do better as elected officials. And if I were to become one, I would definitely try to explain more on how your municipality is actually governed and what that municipality actually has the power to do.
Absolutely.
Because it's not explained very well. It's highly confusing. You don't, you know, this police can't handle this and this can't, like, it's very confusing. So I think that it needs to be way more transparent, which
absolutely
is one of the things on my platform.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The transparency.
Exactly.
So I'm interested what you want to tell us about the story of like Tierra Williams, you know. I mean, you mentioned a little bit of this, but like, what's the story about you moving to Center County and then becoming engaged? Like, kind of what's the last chapter of your life been like that leads us to this point of you running? Does that make sense?
Sure. So I originally came here because my father was a senior meteorologist at AccuWeather.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a new job and he left. And so he left me here.
Oh.
But that's okay. So, he was the reason. He was just like, you know, come up here, try something different. I don't know how he found this place, but I just came up here after him, and me and my son came up here, and I got involved in little things here and there. I was a part of the Osaze Remembering, which was in the Hub. Which was in the Hub, directed by Charles Dumas. And I did that in 2019. And I want to say in 2019, I started doing poetry out loud. And this is when I ran into people like I said, Charles Dumas and Cynthia Mazan and Elaine. And after meeting people like that, I started, when Osaze was murdered, I went to one of these protests held by Gabriel Green called We Are Not. And as an alternative to We Are Penn State, they were saying We Are Not.
Right.
And I went to a couple of those, but I honestly was fighting my own little battle with the school systems here. So I kind of was in my own little, I guess you could say, in my own little bubble. And once George Floyd was murdered, they had that protest, and I went out and they said it was an open mic. And I took that seriously. And once I spoke, I got involved with a couple organizations here. Most prominently is the 320 Coalition. And in August, me and Nonre Nosfiker became the co-chairs of the coalition. And shortly after that, in December, me and Pablo received a grant from Three Dots so I could start my show, Black Tea. And honestly, I've been going ever since. And it was the coalition, as well as PA United, who pushed me and inspired me to run, because I had I still have no intentions of being a politician. Mm-hmm. I have all intentions of being an activist and a person.
Right.
And if I can be in a political space while doing that, then that's what I choose to do. I think that the way politicians have been molded and the rep that they have is not the best. And I just want to be known as someone who is an advocate for the people.
And, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's it.
I get very excited, so I have to be careful. Could you talk a little bit more about the 320 Coalition and Osaze Osaji, right?
Right. He was murdered on March 20th, 2019, while the State College Police Department were attempting to serve a 302 mental health warrant that was called in by his parents, not because someone was assaulting or bothering anyone. Mm-hmm. When they got there, it took them less than 2 minutes of de-escalation. So they say that's what de-escalation, quote unquote. And he was shot 3 times from behind. The 320 Coalition started shortly after that and have been demanding for justice. Initially, the names weren't released. Initially, we didn't have other information.
Sorry, the names of the officers?
The names of the officers, yes, sorry. Were not released initially, and it took over 18 months for that to even happen. So
you know, that's like, of course, I mean, I feel like I need to say it, and I hate to say it, it's like all too familiar of a story. Do you know why his case in particular led to this, like, you know, ongoing, durable group of people who are talking about it? You know, it seems like, just from my perspective, like, video has often been important to kind of activate and mobilize people. Or, you know, was he really well known? Or, you know, were there other cases, and this was the straw that broke the camel's back? I don't mean to be insensitive at all, but I kind of want to understand, like, you know, there's a lot of incidences where there should be more attention, and it seems like it doesn't always happen. So do you have a sense of, like, the origin story for the 320 Coalition?
Well, I wasn't a part of the original founding, but what I do know is that there were organizations around the community who were furious. Mm-hmm. And just general citizens who were furious. And they came together, all agreeing on the fact that they believed and stand by the fact that Osaze Osage was murdered by the police. What probably made it so surreal here is because, you know, in over 100 years, they had never killed anyone here. So I think that made it a big, like, whoa, okay, this can happen. But I think also that it's also been a scapegoat for certain people to use. Oh, because this hadn't happened in 100 years. This was just that one mistake.
We're not like this. Yeah, we're Happy Valley.
Exactly. And that's an issue because killing Black people is not a mistake. And that's used a lot in the media. It's used a lot in political rhetoric. And it's quite insulting that I can be murdered and it just be passed off as a mistake. And people can just go home and go about their lives while these Black families and brown families are constantly picking up the pieces. So when you say what was it, I think it was that and the fact that everybody believed they were living in this Happy Valley, like something couldn't happen here. And a lot of people didn't connect it. There was a lot of outrage at first and then it kind of died down. And then once George Floyd was murdered, then people were like, you know what, maybe that was a murder in 2019. It's like, yeah, it was. And I'm sorry that there was no video for you. I'm mm-hmm. sorry there were no pictures or no body cam footage, but that doesn't make that murder any less important than those who had videos. We have no video of Breonna Taylor either. It still mm-hmm. was outrageous. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, video is not the, video shouldn't be the standard of acknowledging racism and police brutality. And so that's just a problem. And by the way, they did have body cams. They just didn't have them on. So that's an issue in itself. Right. So, yeah, there's probably multiple reasons, but I can definitely say after George Floyd, it woke up a lot of the people. So there were two types of people prior to the George Floyd incident. There were people who believed, well, three types, excuse me. There were people who believed in police brutality and believed that it was happening. And they've been saying that since Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, Tatiana Jefferson. Okay. And I can keep going, right?
No, I wasn't trying to get you to go on.
No. I'm just saying like, and I can literally, unfortunately, I don't have enough time.
Yeah, exactly.
I can literally keep going. And then
that's the whole thing, right? Just for a second. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's like, I don't want people to feel guilty. And I think, you know, anyone can get numb by it and we can't get numb, but it's just, it becomes overwhelming. I think it's understandable. People get a little bit like, not that they don't want to deny it, but anyway, sorry.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, you had people who absolutely don't believe in police brutality and believe that the police are just shooting criminals. And then you had the people in the middle who were so privileged that they did not even have to acknowledge these things, address them. And they didn't necessarily have to pick either side because it wasn't that relevant in their life, wasn't relevant on their timeline, wasn't relevant in their spaces. But then once everyone was forced to sit at home and constantly be watching the news and social media and constantly on their phones, everyone had to pick a side and had to wake up and say, oh, okay, either Black men and women are being unjustly murdered and mishandled by the police or they're not. You had to pick a side. And what did you do? You either said Black Lives Matter or you said All Lives Matter or you said Blue Lives Matter. But either way, you picked a side at the end of this. It mm-hmm. forced people to do that. And it forced people in Center County to do that as well. Either you think it's not really that difficult. Either you believe Osaze was murdered or you believe he wasn't. If you believe that the police made a mistake, then at what point do we consider that mistake murder? I'm not really sure. So it's really one way or the other. Are you saying that a knife in your house is a weapon? I mean, not unless you're trying to stab somebody, right? Not when you're cutting celery. So it's just a very, I don't know why it's so touchy for people who don't want to just pick a side, because if anything, it's touchy for the Black people who live in this community. It's touchy for the family. But I don't understand why it's so touchy for people who can't acknowledge that being shot from behind is strange and just can't acknowledge the lack of what word do I want to use? The fact that I can't think of the word that I want to use. So I'm just going to explain it. The fact that these officers were okay and are still okay with the fact that the officer who murdered Osaze Osage wasn't in his right mind, technically was just coming off issues on his own. And then that wasn't released. I mean,
how about this? I really like words. The shocking normalcy of it.
Yeah, the shocking normalcy, but more the blatant disregard of this officer's mental state. And I wonder how many other officers, not just in State College, but across America, just got off of a, you know, just got out of a little thing here, a thing there, or we already know there's many officers that have, they use massive force over here and then they just get transferred to this station and then they use some kind of inappropriate force here and then they get over here. And then by this time, they actually do murder this person. And that's part of the reason why I started Black Tea, because I wanted to prove that it wasn't Osaze that started racism in the police force. There was already racism within the police force. Osaze just happened to be the first murder. But there were people being harassed, mishandled, profiled, unjustly targeted before Osaze and after. So, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that. That wasn't.
I think as somebody who's, you know, part of social movements and I, you know, try and sort of also understand them, I think you hit on some really important points there. And the reason I kind of went with that also is because I think, you know, we all have short-term memories. And so it's easy, and the media makes that worse. It's easy to kind of see the uprising last summer and after George Floyd is like, of course, that wasn't when Black Lives Matter started. It started in the other Ferguson. But it's been so kind of dominant that 320 is important to understand because it predates that obviously by a year or more. And exactly what you said, there wasn't the video footage, right? It just sort of, to me, it seems like often that has been something that is able to give people who don't have the life experience or don't have the disposition to question the police. Now they have something that's so irrefutable, right? And so I obviously not every video leads to that spark when there's organized people and then that builds, but like you said, there were already people paying attention to this and then the shock of it. I mean, it seems really interesting, right? Like there's this sense that we're this community and I'll just say, you know, in Lewisburg, where I've been trying to get a non-discrimination ordinance passed, people who told me they thought it was important to do, like other local officials, then 6 months later were like, yeah, but are we that kind of place? You know, if we have this and then people start saying there's discrimination, are we going to make it worse? And I'm like, you know, I'm like, well, it's already here. Like, I don't understand why you think creating, right, like a mechanism by which people can say, I think I was discriminated against, not even that is like the official verdict, just that they can say, hey, I think I was, you know what I'm saying? Like, that does not make it worse. It's like saying fire alarms cause fires. So we should probably do another one sometime. I'd love to about even more about the 320 coalition and the story of the State College Police, but I'm worried that we're sort of under promoting your campaign. So supervisors, is Ferguson like others? Are there three supervisors?
There's five.
And five. Okay. Okay. So for anybody like me, who's like a geek about Pennsylvania politics, I'm guessing, and I didn't get a chance to investigate it, and it may be really obscure, but there was a home rule thing in Ferguson because it has 17,000 people, if I saw the numbers right, which is kind of big. Like a lot of townships in my county, some townships are like 800 people. So five supervisors. What's the competitive picture here with your race? I mean, you're in the primary, you're in the Democratic primary, correct?
Correct. And I'd be running for an at-large.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. So some of them are for parts of Ferguson and some are at-large?
For different wards, yes. And then some are large. So the position I'd be running for would be at large. As far as the race goes, all four participants, which would be Lisa Strickland, who would be running for re-election Democrat, Jeremy Thompson, Republican, and Patty Higgins, Republican, would all be, and myself, would all make it through the primaries. So it's the general election where we're really... That's where the race is, because there's only two seats open.
Okay. So just because I can be a little bit dumb. So there's two Democrats running for there's two open seats, one at large and is one award seat. Because you said you're running for the at large.
Is it two at large or one at large?
This year, they're both at large.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. 2 years from now, it's all the wards. I don't know why they do it though.
I mean, yeah. Gotcha. So, okay, great. And of the Republicans, one or both are incumbents?
Neither.
Oh, neither.
Lisa Strickland.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So for you, it's getting more votes than the other three? Like, because sometimes with commissioners, yeah, there's minority. Okay. All right. Okay, good. I got it. So, what do you want to say about your campaign or how it's going? Like, what would you like to talk about? Like, are there particular issues? You mentioned transparency, you know, do you have some other things that are
important? Oh yeah. So, I'm focusing on transparency, equity, and accountability, and that's transparent mental health practices and policies. And that extends not just within the community, but that extends to the campus and that extends within the schools because we're all part of the same mm-hmm. school district.
So you are. So there's one big, like, what, state college
school district? One big high school, rather. Let me say
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
High school, not elementary.
But it's one district, right? All of the.
Yeah, the SCASD.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a disease you don't want to get. You know, get a cream for that. I got SCASD.
Right. Equitable and affordable low-income housing.
Mm-hmm.
So just not just making sure that people can actually afford to live in these places, but making sure we have avenues for people who are already living in low income places and not allowing infrastructure to completely demolish their homes or take away from what they already have, as well as making, and this ties into something else that we might need to work on a larger scale, but providing vouchers for students to also live with housing. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? So that's another thing, and housing is probably going to be one of the honestly, all three of these are big things to tackle.
Is there machinery at your house?
I didn't know they were mowing the lawn.
No worries. Can you unmute? It's fine now. Can you just kind of go back to the vouchers and I'll cut that bit there?
I believe that students should probably have housing vouchers in some form or fashion or something that's a lot cheaper. But again, looking for the families, if we want people to actually stay here, we're going to have to make sure they can afford to live here. And last but definitely not least is accountability of police officers and elected officials. A lot of that stems a lot from the 320 Coalition, making sure people are accountable. But that doesn't mean that it only applies in State College or it only applies in the borough. And it doesn't only apply in Ferguson, honestly. I hope myself and the other supervisors are able to implement a plan where police officers can be held accountable, not just for what they do, but for what they don't say or don't speak up on if they do see things that are happening. And somehow all of the townships get on one accord when it comes to police accountability. Because if the borough's doing this here, and then the college is doing this here, and then Ferguson and Patton are just out here, right? Like, that's not helping. We literally drive through all these townships, most of us daily, so we can be stopped by any one of these officers at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And
not to mention sheriff's deputies.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. I was just saying, and the sheriff.
Sorry.
So just making sure everyone is literally reading out of the same book and on the same page would be beneficial to Center County as a whole. And elected officials, we have to hold them accountable. I have to hold myself accountable. I truly believe that if you're saying that you are speaking for the people.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Then speak for the people.
Yeah. Awesome. So what was I going to say? For you, I mean, it's a lot to run, you know, for office. And so huge props to you. If you look at it with like an analytical lens, or you sort of think about the race, like what are key things that you think are going to be important to win? Like, how are you thinking about the race, you know, as like a campaign to win? Maybe that wasn't a good question.
I'm so much more focused on being authentic, mm-hmm. and showing not just Black people, that you don't have to look a certain type of way to be in politics, but also showing white people the same thing. Like, I'm so more concerned about the after effects of it, the community building, the realization that voices like mine need to be heard, that even if I weren't to win, it wouldn't be something necessarily negative, because I believe that I've given people around here a little bit of hope already. Haven't even made it through primaries, right? Haven't done all of that, but I've given people enough hope to say, you know what? I don't have to straighten my hair. I don't have to do certain things and look a certain way to be in politics. You know, that's one of the reasons why I like Malcolm Kenyatta so much, right? I can wear locks and I can be professional, right? I don't have to go by this everyday average norm to be accepted within government. And then who better to speak about single mothers in government than a single mother? Who better mm-hmm. to speak about low affordable housing than someone who's struggling to live here? Who better to speak about mental health practices than a person that comes from a community where mental health is not even really talked about? Some people just tell you, go pray, right? And in that same community, we had an African-American male who was gunned down by the police having mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just think that I'm more concerned about, I'm probably not answering your question, but I think I'm more concerned about the impression I make overall.
Well, I want to, and I appreciate you putting a little bit of trust in me. Like, I want to go back to something that you said earlier, which was something like, I was inspired or pushed to run. And, you know, I know from experience and from research that women, especially women of color candidates, are rarer, and there's a lot that goes on in that decision. I mean, would you feel comfortable talking a little bit about that for yourself? Because I'm guessing this is your first run for office.
Oh, yes. This is my first run for office. Black women in general, I would say, are at the bottom of America's totem pole. Being a woman and being Black is very difficult in itself. And then being a woman and being Black and being in politics, it's hard not to be called an angry Black woman. It's hard for people to not say that you're aggressive or you have this attitude. If we look at the rhetoric, not just the president used, but that political analysts and reporters and journalists have used to describe African-American, especially dark skinned or darker complected African-American women. Think about things that they've said about Maxine Waters, things they've said about Stacey Abrams, things they said about Shirley Chisholm, right? The things that they say when it comes to African-American women running is very, it's degrading in most points. And not just being dark-skinned African-American woman, but also not having a European hairstyle is a big thing. I mean, it's promoted a lot within our community. I mean, even our madam vice president, right? What people would call a more palatable look that people are more accepting of. Mm-hmm. And then here I come with this high top and nose ring coming out here.
Listen,
like, damn,
I gotta give you some love. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because the whole time I'm like, this is the kind of thing I say, and then my kids are like, oh, Papa, you can't say that. I like, when you came on, I was like, she is really rocking a Grace Jones look. I really love it.
Yeah, I take the Grace Jones. I don't mind that at all. And within herself, and people questioning her, like, is she masculine? Is she feminine? She's
even
like,
that.
I'm just here. I'm just who I am. And so that's a.
You so are, you know, and I've seen the black tea and a friend of mine who's also on the podcast sometimes, Sam Pearson, you know, there's this term intersectionality about mm-hmm. And it's one of these things where, like, it's relevant, but sometimes the term, like, one of the things I've said is that's a description, not a strategy, right? Because I kind of hear people say, like, oh, we need to talk about intersectionality. I'm like, oh, we can talk about it, but what are we going to do about it? But what she said recently, which I really thought was interesting, I'd be curious what you want to say, is it's not intersections, it's collisions, right? It's like collisionality. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah. honestly, because I have to figure out in certain spaces, am I being treated a certain way because I am a woman or because I am Black? And I mean, I've had those same intersectionalities or collisionalities, as you put it, even with my son, mm-hmm. right? If my son is at a school and a student is allowed to rip the hair out of his head, the locks out of his head, and then there's nothing done, is that because he's Black or because he's a boy? I'm not really sure which one is more. I don't even know, right? Because I know that if little Susie over there, if he had cut her hair, ripped her hair out, we'd have an issue. So, you know, is it because he's a boy or is it because he's Black or what is it? Is it because it's locks and maybe you don't see that as, I'm not really sure what it is, right? So there's a lot of times where that definitely collides. I think of the movie Crash, actually. Which is an older movie with actors like Don Cheadle and Sandra Bullock and Ludacris, and it kind of describes kind of like what people really go through every day. They just put it in this one movie, but in so many different ways and so many different aspects, things overlap in such a way. But when it comes to something that's when we're talking about race or we're talking about sexism, and then we talk about being a Black woman being overly sexualized, it's different than a white woman being overly sexualized, mm-hmm. right? When people are describing a white woman and her stance on something, it's different than they describe myself.
Yeah.
You know, so if, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, she might be a woman, but it's still, even the terminology is still going to be different used towards this woman versus someone who looks like me. And I didn't know until running that I would be the first African-American to be elected to the Ferguson Township and the youngest woman. So honestly, that's honestly more scary than anything, right? Most people are like, oh, that's great. It's like, is it great? Do you know what people who were the first went through? Mm. I mean, do you think Ruby Bridges had a great time in school alone?
Was she the little one of the Little Rock students?
Okay. Ruby Bridges was 9 years old when she integrated Louisiana schools.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And so students and parents refused to allow their students to be in there with her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That wasn't a fun experience. Shirley Chisholm, when she was first elected, she had instances where she was just in lunchrooms and people didn't want to sit with her at lunch. They didn't want to sit at the table because a Black woman was sitting at that table. Right. Barack Obama became president, and not only was his birth questioned repeatedly, but I mean, they literally talked about this man for wearing tan suits. I mean, the pettiest of things. Right. I don't think that these things are easy to go through to be the first African-American in a space. Mm-hmm. Because usually when you're the first African-American in a space, it's because the people around don't really want people there, or they're not going to say they don't want people there. They just haven't invited you. Right. So it's not just like a space where I think I'm just going to be walking in and people are just going to be like, oh, come on, Tierra, let's go. You know, I don't think that within the election, I don't think that if I were to be elected, I know that it's going to be a struggle. So.
No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. We have good audio algorithms. This is artisanal podcasting, right? Like if you want slick, high production podcasting, go check out NPR or something. So we're going on a little long, but I just want to share that, like for me, like, you know, as a definitely white person passes away. Like I have had a weird experience in my life. My father's an immigrant. So like in my life, the census added Hispanic and I'm like, because he's from Spain and I speak Spanish. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm Hispanic. And then I've had the experience where that gets into data and I get contacted as if I'm Latino and I'm like, okay, I'm not. Right. But what I really wanted to say was like, you talking about that, like that sort of constant questioning of, you know, of yourself and like, was this or was it that with your son or with other things? In my experience, it's like, that's the thing that I think is important for white people who can open their minds and hearts. Like, I just want to thank you for sharing that. Cause I think that's the thing that's so relatable, right? Like, of course, you know, as an ally for you and for other Black people, like I need to like listen and stand by the side. And like, But it's also, I think it, for me, it's like really important that we also focus. And it seems to me you want to do this with Black Tea, which we haven't talked about enough. Like, people can build understanding, right? And like, you're just walking into the room, walking to the Zoom room, running with the whole Tara Williams, I'm a poet, you know, I've got the hair, like that's a win. Right. You know, have you had other experiences? Like you said, you're running in a majority white township, right? So, you know, Malcolm Kenyatta is great. Pretty sure it's a majority Black district. So you've got a whole other poem you're writing, to use that. Is it something that comes naturally to you, or do you like focus on like, how can I make my life story relatable, especially to like allies or people who don't have my lived experience, or does it just kind of come naturally for you?
Yeah. It does come naturally because
that was about seven questions. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It does come naturally because I'm not acting, right? Like, I save my acting for the stage when I'm playing a role, but whatever I'm saying in front of people or to people, it's very real. And I'm, you know, even some people want me to clean it up a bit or be a little more this or that. I'm just not going to be, because that's just not who I am. And even if I were to do that, I would go right back to being who I was after the fact. So I might as well give people exactly who I am and just operate that way. Honestly, because that's just the best. That's the best way for me. And I personally believe, like, no matter what election, I have to be able to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to look myself in the face, and I have to be able to know, like, every day, like, what did I do for my people today? And shucking and jiving in front of people is not something I plan on doing.
Mm-hmm.
Robert might make you take that out.
No.
And that's not what I'm going to do. That's not my intent.
But see, that's the thing. It's like, authenticity is the most important thing in political campaigns. And you can spend a lot of money to build a media operation that can make something seem authentic to people. And that can work, I think, at really high level, you know, state and federal politics. I mean, that Donald Trump is a man of the people. Give me a break. But, you know, he code switched, you know, he knew how to talk in a language and present himself in a way this stupid fried chicken or whatever. Kentucky Fried Chicken isn't even good fried chicken. Sorry, I'm fried chicken aficionado. But you know, I think, you know, you did kind of map out your strategy, right? I'm going to be authentic and see where the chips fall. Is there been something for you that's been like, you know, fun or interesting or revealing, or sort of a favorite moment? We're going to kind of wrap up here about the campaign so far. I you know, having run and been part of campaigns, for me, it's often like you just meet sort of people, like just sort of the weird quirkiness of America. Like, everybody's story is a little bit different, but, you know, or maybe you discovered you love chicken and waffles. I don't know. That's a central Pennsylvania thing. People around here eat a lot.
Yeah, I'm a vegetarian, so no.
Okay.
But what I have realized, I've realized two things. I've realized that politics are grimy. Like, people are too, what's the word I want to use? It's amazing to see what people do and say to just get in positions. I'm not that type of person. So I think it's interesting to see people reveal themselves, you know? And my best moment, I would say, would have to be the politics and poetry event. You know, I'm a poet, and I was like, you know, I told my little, I have a little funky Ferguson group that Robert's ahead of. And I'm like, hey, you know, how would this sound? Can we do this? Like, let's do a politics and poetry slam. And everybody's like, okay, well, that's a good idea. Like, who would you invite? And I'm like, okay, well, I'll get some poets and I'll get some politicians and I'll mix them up in there. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, you know, it would be a really good thing if I could get Malcolm Kenyatta and Judge Layton to come down.
Oh, that's why he came?
Yes.
Awesome. Because I saw, like, stuff online. I was like, oh, yeah. He's in state college.
You know, and I don't know if they, you know, I'm pretty sure they thought that I could do it, but I don't think any of us really thought that it was going to just really happen. But we were able to get Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, Judge Tamika Lane, all of the borough candidate slates. I'm sorry, borough council slate of candidates. We had Dr. Sultan from Patton. Then we had great people in the community like Dr. Charles Dumas, Camellia Bed Welsh, Akilah Kikor Franklin, Cynthia Mazat, Elaine Mega Wilgus. I mean, Robert even did something. I mean, it was great. I think I'm just really proud of myself that I was able to pull that kind of thing off. And like I said, like Robert helped. He made sure we were together and we were fed really good there. So that was great. Thank you, Happy Raps, again. And you know, I just really it was a really nice way to hear people, like people who thought like for instance, I'll have to say it, like Sultan, Dr. Sultan Magruder from Patton. He was like, "Ooh, I need to write my poem. I haven't done it yet." His poem was amazing, right? Gopal. Gopal said he didn't even write and he wasn't going to write. His poem was amazing, right? So it was amazing to see people like, you thought you were going to do that bad. And then, you know, so it was interesting. And that was one of, I guess, I would say my highlights. Like if I didn't accomplish anything, I was able to get all of these people.
Come on. You've accomplished a lot already. Let's be clear about
that. Oh, I mean, in the candidacy.
Even in the candidacy, like you said, running, you know, that matters. So that's tremendous. Well, I think it's, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. So did you read a poem? Is that, it was like a poetry reading?
Yes. I performed a poem I called Optimal. So yeah.
Could we get a little bit of it?
Oh, let's see.
Is it handy?
It is handy. That's interesting that you would ask that. You want me to read this whole poem?
Whatever you want, or, you know, or a part you like, or some other poem. Look, I just make this up as I go along.
Yeah, everybody wants me to do it, but that's fine. I'll just read it because it's not going to make sense to read one part.
Okay.
So what do you think, Robert? Should I read it?
Yes. Anything with poetry, yes, you should read.
All right. Like I said, it's called Optimal. My eyes are black. No, not black in the sense of dark oceans in the middle of my face that define my beauty. Not black like the depths of the sea where only the most exotic and secretive creatures lie. No, not black like the midnight sky in the middle of the country where the twinkle of stars is the only light you see. Although all of these are true and all define black, that is not the black I speak of today. You see, my eyes are black like the nightclubs that wouldn't let Marion sing and blacker than the billy clubs that beat down Megger. You see, my eyes are my ancestors' eyes and they've been down paths so dark not even their shadows would follow. My eyes are inherently black. Black like the colored only section, blacker than the Underground Railroad, black like the new Jim Crow. My eyes are black like the hoodie of Trayvon Martin, black like Sandra Bland, black like the night Breonna Taylor died. My eyes are black like the whitewashed history of America and the watered down accomplishments of my people. You see, my eyes are black like the hands that built the pyramids. Black like the soul of James Brown and the spirit of James Baldwin. Black like the Olympic Games in the 60s and the leather jackets in the 70s. Blacker than Tulsa, Oklahoma or the Tuskegee Airmen. No, wait. Black like Maxine Waters and Stacey Abrams. Blacker than the Georgia elections and Shirley Chisholm. Black like the magic of Josephine Baker and Simone Biles. Blacker than John Lewis and Fannie Lou Hamer. You see, my eyes are black like the deep ebony skin of Lupita, the talent of Viola Davis, and the boldness of Grace Jones. Yet, my black eyes are not blind. My black eyes see the injustice of my people. They see the discrimination. They see the poverty, the sickness, the shame. They see the fear and the rage. My black eyes see the killing of my people and weep with the tears of my ancestors for future generation. You see, my eyes are an oasis of oppression, but have always overcome every obstacle because my eyes are blacker than America's backbone. My eyes are blacker than the angry black woman I cannot help to be, but I have the right to be. My eyes are black because my world is black, okay? So when you ask me why I see things in black and white, it is not because I want to. Thank you.
Inside. He said, if you can't take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you.